Well, we'll pick up where we left off last week in Luke chapter 17, verse 20 to the end of the chapter. How this got started is the Pharisees asked Jesus what would be the sign of the coming of God's kingdom. And so Jesus just quickly and briefly tells them, there is not going to be a sign of the coming of God's kingdom. It's not anything that you can see because God's kingdom dwells within you. And I don't know if I mentioned it last week, but I intended to. Kaufman's comment on that was, what is very plain and clear with Jesus' teachings and dealings with the Pharisees is the kingdom of God was not and what was definitely not dwelling within the Pharisees. So, anyway, then from there, he goes on and talking to the disciples, the apostles, and tells them the rest of this chapter that Kaufman said a lot of it is very difficult to explain. Thought is, and what makes most sense to me, these Pharisees and the apostles all had this idea that God was going to, when he established his kingdom, it was going to be a big physical, some kind of appearance, some great disaster. And I think what makes the most sense to me, something like that they would have really liked to have seen, as I mentioned last week, would be God to bring down fire and brimstone and wipe out the Roman Empire. I think that they would have said, okay, this is what we've been looking for. Now we can see Jesus is the Messiah and God has established his kingdom now. And so we're gonna reign here as a big Jewish nation. Well, that was a false concept, but Jesus tells them about a cataclysmic event that will happen, and in an extinction level event, and then what we'll cover today, he tells them about two previous extinction level events that happened in the past, and he said, this event that I'm talking about will be come in like manner as those two did. Anyway, of course, the two previous extinction level events were the flood with Noah in the days of Noah, and then Sodom and Gomorrah. And then this extinction level event that Jesus is referring to here is the end of time. So, even though, he's telling them, well, the kind of event and sign that you're looking for will happen, but it's going to be at the end of time. So that's what makes the most sense to me, that's what he's explaining to. Now, the apostles did not have this down exactly, because even on the last day that Jesus was on earth before his ascension, they were asking him, is this the time that God is going to restore his kingdom, the Israelite nation? And so they were still looking for a physical kingdom. So they did. I think almost all of this, I feel like, went right over their head. I think the evidence shows that. Until, and Jesus' answer was, I'm going to send the Comforter. Don't worry about all of this. You don't understand it now. The Comforter will guide you into all truth, and you'll understand it then. So you just wait. You wait here in Jerusalem, and the Comforter will come. And so that's what they did. Anyway, so there were a lot of misunderstandings then, and unfortunately still now. But we'll pick up here in verse 26 of Luke chapter 17. And as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be also in the days of the Son of Man. So Jesus describes what he's talking about. Verse 27. They ate, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. So they carried on life like they had for hundreds and thousands of days previously. It was just another day. They had no clue that destruction was upon them. Likewise, here's the second extinction level event that God caused from heaven. Likewise, as it was also in the days of Lot, they ate, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they built. But on the day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even so, it will be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. Okay, so he's saying it's going to be in like manner. It's going to catch everyone off guard. No one is going to be able to predict it, even though Noah was telling them for 120 years that God is going to destroy the earth with the flood, and you better get in the boat that my sons and I are building. But none of them did. They all rejected him. Even down to his dad and, I guess, the granddad, Methuselah. Because either Methuselah died in the flood or his death brought on the flood. Because that's what his name means, is it will come at his death. Any questions or comments on this? Yeah, because he's already 969, that's right. So how much longer would he have lived? That's right, that's a good question. But definitely Lamech, Noah's dad, died in the flood. So what does that tell us? He was unrighteous. He was unrighteous. He was ignoring his own son. Okay. Now I'll read Kaufman from our handout from last week. And I'll read this, what says verses 26 through 29. Significantly, these were cataclysmic physical disasters. The Dead Sea today lies on the site of the cities of the plain, which were destroyed by the cataclysm mentioned here, of talking about Sodom. And which... Everyone that I've ever known about, whenever I watch these documentaries, they're always looking around the Dead Sea to try to find Sodom and Gomorrah. Kaufman thinks that Sodom and Gomorrah, or he thought that it was below the Dead Sea, underneath it. Well, maybe so, and that would explain why no evidence. But although it would not take the Dead Sea covering it up for no evidence, because God intended no evidence to be left. So I'm confident that he... Even if it's not underneath the explanation of why there's no evidence, they haven't been able to find any buildings or any signs of life around the Dead Sea, is because with fire and brimstone, God utterly obliterated it. Yes?
You see the neck there in the lower portion of the Dead Sea.
Yes, right here? Yeah. By Zoar, where it says Zoar, yeah. Okay.
Either World War One or World War Two. Guys walked across there. It was so shallow okay. at that point that they could walk across it. So it's continually filling up. Of course, there's not much place for that water to go to except to fill up.
That's right. Yeah, that's why it's a Dead Sea, because it doesn't go anywhere. It just evaporates, and all the salts and minerals that come down from the Jordan River in rainfall, they just stay there. And so that's why it's getting more salinity more and more all the time. So yeah, the water doesn't go anywhere. It just evaporates from this point. But back in World War II, it was shallow enough that they were able to walk across that southern neck. Okay, well, that's interesting.
Either World War I or World War II.
Oh, okay. I see, yes.
Not much difference in time.
No, just the early 1900s, about 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Well,
most likely, if you're going to look someplace, I would definitely look under the water on the south end of that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
There is a, saw it yesterday, but I didn't look at it. There is a video about what is under the south end of the Dead Sea.
You did?
Yeah. It was a documentary, but I didn't look at it.
Okay. Well, that would be interesting if they did a submarine or something. Okay. So the ravages of the flood were genuine, worldwide, and attested not merely in the word of God, but by the legends of fabled Atlantis and many others. And the many others, what I've heard from multiple sources as I've watched different documentaries or whatnot, they said every culture, every ancient culture or whatnot, has a story of the flood. The Chinese have a story of a flood. The South Americans do. The Native Americans did. Here in North America. The people from India. I guess the Europeans. But the every culture have stories of a great flood in years past. And then, moreover, there is hardly a hill on earth that does not show signs of once having been beneath the sea. There's even reports of on Mount Everest that they have clams on top of the mountain. And as the people were hiking up there, and they saw clams. So the Mount Everest was at one time covered with water, obviously. And was the bottom of the ocean. The fact that Jesus selected these two great physical phenomena from the Old Testament make them comparable to the second coming of Jesus. And it's a clear word that the second coming will also be such a physical thing as these other two were real historical events. A cataclysm of unbelievable and unprecedented destruction is what they will be, just like these other two previous. So that's why I call them extinction-level events. And that in the midst of the great disaster, the Son of Man will appear to redeem the faithful from earth who shall be caught up with the Lord in the air. And then he concludes this paragraph with, men either believe this or they don't. And Kaufman says he believes it. And he strove to read the word of the Lord correctly. And he believes what Jesus said is true, even though he says that he has no ability whatsoever of being able to explain all of this. So even though some of this is difficult to explain, he knows that what Jesus said will take place. And then he says, we shall not detail all of the incidents relative to Noah and Lot. Those Old Testament narratives should be well known to every Christian. And the lesson here is not what happened to those generations, but what is going to happen to all the world and the generation that is alive when the Lord returns. And then this verse 30, when Jesus said, even so, it will be in the day of the Son, when the Son of Man is revealed. So both in the case of Noah and that of Lot, God's people were taken away from the scene of judgment before it occurred. And Paul indicated that the same will be the case with Christians when the final disaster falls. So, I thought this was a good statement. And even though I knew this, I didn't have this exactly down in my head, but I was glad that Kaufman spoon-fed me here. What he is saying is Jesus is describing three extinction-level events, and the previous two that have already happened, God removed the righteous before the destruction occurred, so the righteous did not experience the destruction. which, of course, Noah and his family on the ark, and then Lot and his family got out of Sodom and Gomorrah. And then the Lot's wife, of course, being the exception. Even though she got out, she didn't escape the destruction. And then, it, in like manner, it will be the same at the end of time. The righteous will be removed from this extinction level, creation ending event that Jesus describes. And that Peter describes, as Kaufman says here, Paul indicated that the same will be with the same case with the Christians when the final disaster falls. 1 Thessalonians 4. And we've covered that several times, so we won't look at that again here. Then on the second page, about the next page, turn it over. Other analogies which we are perhaps justified in drawing are, and I'll read the very end. He says, these analogies, some of which are in the text here of Luke 17, and some of which have been imparted into it from the writings of Paul, and they are all true. So he meshed Jesus' teaching here in Luke 17 with Paul's 1 Thessalonians 4. And I'll say, because I even saw some similarities from 2 Peter 3, so from Peter's teaching on the end of time. Okay, number one, faith will virtually have ceased on earth. And really the only other time that I've ever heard anyone refer to this besides Kaufman here was Dad. And Dad, multiple times, all through the years, he said that God will destroy the earth when there are not enough righteous to justify man's existence. So, and he would always point, people would ask him, when do you think the end of time will be? Or when do you think Jesus will return? And he always says, when there's not enough righteous on the earth. That would be his answer. And he pointed back to the same two occurrences that Jesus points to. He said, look on the days of Noah. There were not enough righteous. Noah was the only one. Look at the days of Lot. Lot could not find 10 righteous in the big cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. So that there were only few righteous left. And then people from time to time, or the question would come up, well, how few is few? And how many would that be? And God said, well, in the days of Noah, that was 8. That few was 8. And then in Sodom and Gomorrah, it was 4, but only 3 survived. So, any questions or comments on that? Number 2. Men will be busy in the same old ways, pursuing their same old interest. Number 3, materialism will have won the minds of men. Number 4, the utmost security shall be felt by men. They won't have any thought whatsoever that there is impending disaster on the horizon, that they're going to feel safe, and that they'll be thinking that things will continue to happen in the future days and millennia as they have in the past days and millennia. Number 5, all appeals regarding the worship of God shall be scoffed at. Number 6, the second coming shall be an instantaneous thing like lightning, and Jesus refers to this. Number 7, it shall be worldwide, occurring everywhere simultaneously, and therefore involving the totality of earth in its enveloping atmosphere. Number 8, the Christians shall be caught up out of the firestorm and shall suffer no harm from it, just like the righteous were caught up and removed from the disaster of the flood and Sodom and Gomorrah. And number 9, Jesus and his holy angels shall deliver them, the righteous. They shall ever be with the Lord. Okay, any questions or comments on this? Then we will end here, and Lord willing, we'll pick up after we sing with verse 31.